Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Hey, it's J. Michael Michael here, and if you're like me, you love talk radio, and like me, you just can't find the right radio stations for your talk radio habit. Right there on your AM radio dial. Well, how about you tune into LA Talk Radio? See, LA Talk Radio is a .com and has it all, from sports, politics, to religion. Well, to just regular talk. And right now, we have the beginning writer's very favorite show, The Writer's Block. So sit back, relax, enjoy, put your favorite alcoholic beverage in your mug, because everything starts right now.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill, only on LA Talk Radio.
I'm a traveling man, made a lot of stops all over the world, and in every port I own the heart of at least one lovely girl. I've a pretty señorita waiting for me down in old Mexico, and if you're ever in Alaska, stop and see.
Well, I couldn't come up with a better song for this show than that one right there.
I know all the words.
Ricky Nelson, the traveling man.
Jim bet me that I couldn't name that in two notes, and I did.
I did. He did. I actually gave him four notes, and he got it in two. So, anyway, it's LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Writer's Block, and I am your host, Jim Christina. And I'm in studio, of course, with Mr. Bob Brill.
Yes, sir.
And we have, of course, and as a guest tonight, we have, well, I'm not going to say, because how was your holiday? And Happy New Year to everybody on the AM radio.
It was good, man. It was really good.
Yeah.
A lot of good food. I had to work a little bit, a couple of days today, so I didn't get to celebrate Christmas Eve like I wanted to, but it was great. We had a good time. My wife bought me two rounds of golf at Ojai Valley Country Club.
Oh, nice place.
So she got a Groupon, so she got a little discount, and it was good. So I'm looking forward to that, maybe playing with my best
Groupon,
friend.
Groupon, isn't that a mustard?
Yeah, well, yeah. It's all green. Hopefully it's green on the course.
There you go.
And no, it was great. I bought a baseball card collection, and so I'm working on moving that. And so, I mean, things are just...
For those who don't know, Bob Brill is a baseball aficionado, and he's got, like, tons of baseball cards.
And I write a baseball blog.
First editions. Yeah.
I write a baseball blog called Baseball in the 1960s, which is doing really well. So I have a lot of fun with that. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I got a thingy from my cousin today. She goes, well, what did you do on New Year's
You got
Year's
a thingy
Eve?
From your cousin?
I did. Well, on Facebook. And she goes, what did you do on New Year's Eve? You know, who stayed up until like midnight?
I did.
Well, wait a minute. And so this is my Christina family thing on Facebook. And so I'm reading all these responses and say, oh, yeah, I stayed to midnight. You know, I mean, my granddaughters. And I said, what's midnight? I haven't seen midnight in years. I go to bed at like 9:30.
Well, you know, being in radio all these years, you know, I used to, when I was a news director and when I had kids growing up, I would take Christmas off and I'd work New Year's. So
right.
New Year's was always fine. You know, I always knew what was going on. Went to bed early. And this is the first year in like years. I mean, years that I was actually able to stay up and like, hey, it's like midnight. I'm going to bed at 2 o'clock.
Well, that's because you're usually on the air at midnight.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, tonight we have actually for our very first show of 2019, we have the, well, I'm just going to give them to you. Mr. Henry Park. Henry, you with us? Don't tell me we lost you.
No, you were
and
popping
all the
in and out.
Oh.
Well, hi, Henry. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year, Jim. Happy New Year, Bob.
Hey,
Bob,
yeah.
I really enjoyed your film, Sundown.
Oh, thank you.
Oh,
thank
you saw
so
it finally.
Much.
Oh, I sure did. And you really shot at Roy Rogers' Double R Bar Ranch?
Yes, we did. We shot it at,
we
did. We rented the ranch for a day, and we shot it up there. And the whole thing was shot in a very contained space. So it was all three scenes. In matter of fact, the sheriff's office was we converted from a horse stable.
Wow.
Yeah, we took a horse stay. We kind of shot it at those angles, if you notice. It's really, really contained. So it worked out really well. Yeah. Thank you so much. I appreciate that, Henry.
Oh, you betcha.
Well, what have you got for us tonight, Henry?
Well, I'll tell you. Now, I'm not a big one for New Year's resolutions, but I am planning a major change with Henry's Western Roundup with the new year, and that is a return to posting every week, if possible, at the very least, every other week. I plan to post at least something, even if it's just a DVD review, mm-hmm. every week. Now, enough about me. What's new? INSP is showing The Virginian again from episode 1. They've started playing Steve McQueen in Wanted Dead or Alive again from episode 1.
Wow.
And on Sunday night, isn't that a great show?
I loved Wanted Dead or Alive.
I did too. I like the half-hour shows, I think, better than hour and 90-minute dramas. Give me the first 6 seasons of Gunsmoke.
Right.
You know, give me Have Gun Will Travel, The Rebel.
They work better when you're on the treadmill for a half hour. They're only 26 minutes or something.
What's a treadmill? Go ahead.
Oh, on Sunday night, INSP also begins season 5 of their reality Western series, The Cowboy Way.
Oh, okay. That's the Alabama one, right?
That's the one, although it's interesting. This season, they're going to be spending more time in Texas.
Oh.
And the guys are who have been, of course, raising cattle are going to be, I understand, much more involved in the cattle business of buying and selling. So should be a little different.
Yeah. I've never actually seen it.
It's a really entertaining show. It's odd for a reality show because the people aren't depraved and obnoxious. They're just three really likable, believable guys that do, their work, that take care of cattle and their ranches. And it's often very nuts and bolts, but, you know, very believable and convincing stuff.
Wow.
More stuff that's coming to TV Western-wise. In April, AMC's The Sun is going to return with Pierce Brosnan and mm-hmm. Jacob Laughlin again as Texas cattle and oil mogul Eli McCullough at different ages.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be 10 episodes. Kevin Costner is going to be back in season 2 of Paramount Network's Yellowstone.
Right.
No date's been announced, but season 1 began in mid-June of 2018, and folks are guessing it's going to be around the same time this year. And I just had a wonderful interview with Kevin Costner a couple of weeks ago about Yellowstone, his upcoming Netflix movie, The Highwayman, and his whole Western career.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
And, yeah. And you know where you're going to find good Westerns on TV. Guess what channel is now airing Bonanza and Annie Oakley and the 1954 Western anthology series, Stories of the Century?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh.
Who?
Jim Davis.
That's Jim Davis, yeah.
Jim Davis.
That's the guy, yeah. Jewish Life TV.
No way. Jewish Life TV.
Yes. JLTV is showing all of those, plus Jack Benny and You Bet Your Life with Groucho Marx.
That's a funny show.
Oh, I love it.
But Jimmy.
I used to rush home for that or the app.
Yeah. Say the magic word.
For $20, right?
For $20. $20, what's the magic word? What else you got going on?
And the dust won't come down from the roof.
There you go. What else you got?
Oh. Well, we're getting a brand new spaghetti Western this month. In fact, in just a couple of weeks, on Friday, January 18th, The Bounty Killer opens at the Arena Cinema in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Stars Crispin Belfrage, Ethan McDowell, and Aaron Stalstra. Many of the same folks that made the excellent Six Bullets to Hell are part of this one. And the same company, Chip Baker Films, has another spaghetti Western, The Price of Death, coming later this year.
Mm-hmm.
They're all shot in Almeria, Spain, on the old Sergio Leone sets.
Oh, wow. Okay.
HBO's Deadwood is in the can and will be arriving as a movie on HBO sometime in the spring. Don't have a date yet. There's a bunch of stuff happening at the Autry. The most important thing, I think, for your listeners in particular, on Wednesday, January 16th, folks who like to write Westerns can attend How the West is Written, Inside Modern TV Westerns, with a panel that includes writers from Longmire, The Sun, Hell on Wheels, and Briscoe County Jr.
Oh, okay. Love Longmire.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that was coming up. I got an invitation to that, but I can't make it.
Give me your card.
I got my ticket. Also at the Autry on Saturday, January 12th, they'll be screening a 35-print of the rarely seen Jacques Tourneur Western Canyon Passage with Dana Andrews, Susan Hayward, and Ward Bond. And Tuesday the 15th, come for Rob Ward's Award on Westerns, whose subject will be the making of the 1981 Western Catalani and Little Breeches.
Oh, my God. Oh, my gosh. I saw that one time in 1981, probably.
Was that enough? I haven't seen it.
You know what? It was one of those kind of movies where you wonder when you walk out, why did I spend that
$2.50?
It was worth the popcorn.
Oh, my gosh. Maybe we can get you to introduce the screening.
Sure.
I'm working that night.
And, you know, you can learn all about this and more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Well, thank you, Henry. Oh, I have a bit of news for you.
What's that?
My book, Jonah Blue, which I still haven't seen reviewed in your blog, has sold over 7,000 copies.
Oh, I read that. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well done. Can you hear my applause?
I can.
Hard to hold the phone and do that.
Okay, pal. We'll talk to you in February.
All right. I look forward to it.
Okay. Take care.
Happy New Year, guys.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.
That's Henry Park. Now tonight, let's get into the meat and potatoes of our guest tonight, because our guest this evening he wrote a book. It's called The Expat Files. And for those listening, you can pretty much tell what the Expat Files probably are. It's a memoir of this gentleman's 50 years in journalism and 70-plus years of life in the United States and Canada. He began his career as a copy boy at the New York Times and went steadily downhill from there.
He stayed in the profession.
He stayed in the profession. He was a regular contributor to Maclean's Magazine, Washington Post, Toronto Globe, and the Mail, and the Toronto Star. And he's now got his own blog. The Becker Files, which I went through today, read some tremendous stuff in there, very tongue in cheek. And he's continued to offer columns on a wide variety of subjects. He's working on another book and a novel. And would you please welcome to the Writer's Block, Mr. Ken Becker.
Happy New Year, gentlemen.
Happy New Year,
yeah,
Ken.
You too.
Happy New Year. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. Your book was phenomenal. And your blog is absolutely, it's like a wonder. It truly is.
Oh, thanks.
It's a lot of fun to read, and I'm sure that you do it with tongue in cheek when you're writing it.
I try to play for laughs more than anything else, but there's some serious stuff in there as well, which can be pretty funny, actually.
Well, you know, when I started reading the preface to your book, it was kind of okay. I know where this is going.
Yeah. Right.
Did you?
Well, you know, it's our careers are somewhat parallel, but not totally parallel. I mean, worked for and coming up through the, I think you were a little bit ahead of me, and you know, just covering certain stories and fascinated by some of the stories. And one of the stories that, and this is going to be so off the wall, not a question you expected. If you and I were in the same circuit back in the day, we would probably be at odds, and I'll tell you why. You were an APA guy, and I was a Strat guy. Are we connecting there?
Yeah, no.
Well, you know.
You lost me,
Your chapter on Yaz. And
okay.
You guys were playing APBA for listeners in Virginia.
Oh, okay.
There were two forerunners to fantasy baseball and football back in the day in the 60s until the internet came along. And those were Strat-O-Matic, which is a game.
Right.
And very detailed. And APA, which was a game, very detailed. They were both
similar,
but they were different. And APA guys did not associate with Strat guys, and Strat guys did not associate with APA guys. Matter of fact, they couldn't stand each other. There were certain places where
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Now, I in Palm Springs, I was not even allowed to talk to some of the guys in the APA League because I was a Strat guy. Anyway, I just thought I'd bring that up, and if there are any Strat or APA players out there, they know what we're talking about. But I did want to seriously ask you.
It was in a lot of ways, all of the participants, they started with six of us, and we were all journalists, except for the brother of a journalist, but otherwise we were all journalists. And it was we played in the wintertime. It was our hot stove. Every one of us had a fireplace in our house, so we called it the Fireside League. And we'd start with a case of 24 beers and go from there.
And Carl Yastrzemski was your first pick, so it must have been 1967.
Well, yeah, Yaz, I'm a New Yorker, but I kind of fell in love with Yaz. I was in Boston in 67, the impossible dream year, and he was just so heroic. And I grew up a Brooklyn Dodger fan and really didn't have a team. And so the Red Sox became my team and Yaz became my man. My first dog was named Yaz, actually.
Could you spell it?
Yeah. Isn't it Y-A-Z?
No, the full name, Carl Yastrzemski.
No, I can't spell it.
Yastrzemski.
Boom.
Or as we
Bonus.
Say in Canada, Y-A-Z.
Zed. Yes, but you're an expat. You should just be saying Z.
I actually, if you all my American spellings and not much of the metric system seeped into my book.
Right. It's all American spellings.
Yes.
But, you know,
I never got used to color with O-U-R.
Oh, yeah, or liquor, you know. You know, I've often wondered, in England and in Canada and probably Australia and New Zealand, they instead of saying, I'm going to the hospital, they always say, I'm going to hospital.
Yes, they do.
Why do they throw off the?
I have no clue.
Oh, okay. They truly are an expat, then.
No idea.
Because they have to be different from us.
Maybe
they just talk funny.
When we talked the other night, you had mentioned that you had no idea that you were going to write this book until you retired. Actually,
I took a run at this book in 2007. And I don't know what the word retired means, because if you're a writer, you just keep writing. So
right. You never retire.
Maybe retired means you don't get a regular paycheck. But I took a run at this book in 2007, and I felt pretty good about it. I couldn't sell it, mainly because I think one agent in New York said to me, she said, it's a great book, the writing's terrific, but who the hell is Ken Becker? She said their memoir's coming out this year by Barbara Walters and some teenage TV star who wrote about her fat problem, and I couldn't possibly compete with that, so I couldn't sell it. So. I put it on the shelf and wrote other things in the meantime. I was still working. I was working in TV and teaching journalism at the time.
You know, one of the questions I had for you, and bring this up because somebody asked me this in an interview I did the other day, and I just thought it was a fascinating question. Never thought of it before. Out of all the stories that you've covered, what story do you remember the most for the right reasons, and which story do you remember the most for the wrong reasons?
Oh, boy.
That's a good question.
My participation in it, or?
Yeah.
I wrote recently about the 50th anniversary of a triple murder-suicide I covered in Livermore, California, when I was working for the paper there. That was my first reporting job. And that has stuck with me because, and mainly because I was in the office, I heard the call on the police radio, 187 at this address, and I rushed over there and saw a door open and walked right into the door and walked right into a murder scene. And the first thing I saw was a little boy who had been shot in the head. And then I followed voices into a back bedroom, and there were two cops there and three more bodies. The father who had killed his family and a little girl and the wife. And so that story has stuck with me to this day. I mean, I can still see and smell and remember what it was like. And there was another aspect of it looking back now is, as a journalist, as a reporter, in those days, that's 1968, November 1968, and the amount of information we got on that story seems remarkable in these days, in this day and age. We had the killer's doctor who told us everything we wanted to know. We had his lawyer who told us everything we wanted to know. The family told us everything we wanted to know. It was a lot easier to get information in those days, and we pieced together an amazing story in just a couple of days. Pretty much nailed down the motive for this horrible triple murder suicide. Yeah.
And it's 50 years.
What was your question?
Well, that was perfect. And then the one story that you covered that you remember for the right reasons.
I guess. It also told me that I had something in my gut that I was cut out for the business. Because my reaction to seeing all this horror was just getting to work and taking notes and writing everything down and remembering everything and then getting back to the office and making phone calls. And I think that's when I knew I was cut out for the business, because when I was a kid, I mean, I have very little education and I didn't much care for school, and I just wanted to get on with life. And fortunately, I guess, this was during the beginning of the height of the Vietnam War, when I was eligible for the draft, and I was deferred for better reasons than bone spurs. And
go get him, Ken.
And so that was out of the way. I just wanted to get on with life. And as a copy boy at the New York Times, I really didn't learn anything there, except I really liked the life. I mean, I liked these people, and they were smart, and they were funny, and they drank, like, every day. And they smoked. I mean, one guy smoked Galois, for God's sake.
Oh, God. Hanging out in the newsroom back in those days was just awful. You know, it was like, you know, well, if the guys weren't at the bar, they were smoking, and they usually smoked in the newsroom, which was pretty bad, right?
Yeah.
Oh, everybody smoked in the newsroom. Yeah, I didn't. I smoked in the newsroom until the late 80s. Everything was nicotine stained in those days.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
I remember copy got really yellow for a reason.
Hey, I'm gonna take a real quick break here, and then we're gonna get back, and then we're gonna call Bobby Jean, and we're gonna bring her into this fascinating conversation. So, don't go away. Everybody, stay right where they're at, and we'll be back in probably less than a minute. Imagine deep blue skies, majestic mountains, and acres of lush green orange trees in a tranquil country setting. Sound like a perfect vacation spot? It is for your dog. That's right. All Dogs Rule Day Cap and Sleepover is the premium place for your four-legged friends to spend their time away from you. Whether you are going away for a one-night or two-night getaway or an extended vacation, All Dogs Rule is the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. When your dogs return home, you'll have to ask whose vacation was better. So check out their website at alldogsrule.com or give them a call at 805-524-1100. And they're in Fillmore, California. And the number again is 805-524-1100. All Dogs Rule. And no one needs another boring shirt is one of the most famous quotes of Rock Mountain Ranchwear's founder, Papa Jack. Out West asks, what's on your wish list this holiday? Well, the holidays are past. But a bohemian-styled shirt with dazzling embroidery and a pinch of rock star bling? Yeah, it never goes out of style. So go Americana with a cozy plaid flannel shirt to chase the chill away. Come on over to Out West Shop to find the perfect shirt for everyone on your list, even yourself. So use coupon code GIFT. I don't even know if that's still good. You can check with Bobby Jean. You can call her directly. And save $10 off your order of $50 or more. Call them directly at 877-340-9378. And it's always a great day out west. And speaking of Bobby Jean, we're going to give her a call right now. And we're going to bring her into and talk to her for a little bit. And let's see. This new Skype thing is, like, ridiculous. It's horrible. Okay. Huh? What? But it's something, yeah. Let's see if we can get Bobby Jean here. Maybe not. Maybe she turned her phone off. Oh, Bobby Jean, are you there? No. Oh.
Train.
There you are. Hi. You're on the you're on the phone with Ken Becker.
Oh my God. Well, and now you can hear the conductor making an announcement.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
I am so excited to be on with Ken, although you may not want to keep me on because of the noise of the train. I've been enjoying Ken's book so much. Welcome, Ken.
Thank you. I hope you're enjoying the train.
Yeah, she's snuck away for the whole month of December and then called me yesterday and said, well, she's going to be on a train tonight, too.
So. Well, that's good. You hear the clack, clack, clack.
Yeah,
the wheels,
we get the clickety, clack.
It's the Orange Blossom special, you know.
Yeah, real people doing real stuff.
That's it. That's it. Well, there you go.
Absolutely. Well, I have not, I will admit that I have not quite finished your book. I've just read your interview with Pat Conroy, and then some of went on after that as you began to write that great American novel in Thunder Bay. And I have no idea what you've all been talking about, but I'm thoroughly enjoying this book.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I mean, my approach to the book was very much so-called new journalism in terms of establishing a narrative and keeping writing in time and just with a beginning, a middle, and an end. Thank you. The storytelling is what's most important to me, and so I appreciate that.
Well, one of the things, Ken, that I know that has affected all of us as journalists is the Internet, of course. And I think even before the Internet, we got to the point where things got a little bit out of hand because we weren't able to get to people anymore. We were getting statements and quotes on news releases, and now, of course, it's, you know, we're taking Twitter as comments and things like that. The face of journalism has changed so much. Do you think it's better or worse?
Oh, God. There's more of it. There's more to pick and choose from. But whether it's better, I think it's worse, honestly. The storytelling is just, I can't tell you the last time I've read something from beginning to end on a newspaper website or a magazine website. It just, it doesn't capture me the way some of the writing that I grew up with captured me, and some of my writing I really appreciated captured me. I loved you know, Hunter Thompson and Gay Talese, and I was just reading the recently, going back into Tom Wolfe's book, The New Journalism, and reading Joe Esterhaus's piece called Charlie Simpson's Apocalypse, which he wrote for Rolling Stone, which is it's like a novella. It's beautiful, and it takes you on a nice long ride. I just don't find I come out of it very satisfied. But some of the investigative reporting that's being done nowadays, which is something I was never terribly interested in, the writing interested me more. But some of the investigative reporting is very important, and it's quite good.
Yeah, it is. It is. I don't read newspapers online either. So it's I find that their writing almost seems lazy.
Well, it's gotten that way, yeah. And that's kind of what I was getting at. And you know, so much of what we have to do now has to be so short, has to be, you know, for the shortest attention span
right.
possible. Magazine writing is dead, and I know Ken will pretty much concur with a lot of that. That it's everything has to be so capsulized because the attention spans are so short, and the audience that we're reaching now and going to reach in the future has a shorter attention span too.
Hey, Bobby Jean, is your conductor throwing up back there?
No, I'm just listening because, of course, I didn't know where you were, what you had been talking about, and I'm just listening and enjoying getting caught up with what you're all discussing.
Well, you know what?
Bobby Jean brought up Pat Conroy, and one of the. I did write about books and authors for a while, and that was also part of my education. I mean, I was in my 40s and 50s, but still, talking with people like Pat Conroy and Tim O'Brien was a favorite of mine, and still is. And sitting around with Dave Barry, who's not a great serious writer, but sitting around cracking wise with Dave Barry for an hour was a lot of fun. And Carl Heisen, his sidekick from Florida, who's also, I'm a great fan of his work. So, I mean, we learn a lot about writing from reading. So,
you have your book is unique in that you have some great names for your chapters, and I'm just going to read off a
Thank
few
you.
Because they it makes you want to go to that chapter and read it. And one of my favorites, one of my favorites absolutely is Kraut Eats British Nurse.
I knew you were going to say that.
I thought, holy crap. And then it's followed by Tricky Dick and Trudeau. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Well, Kraut Eats British Nurse actually came from a headline in a London tabloid. And it was a story I covered in the far north of Canada, where a German bush pilot was flying three people. He was flying a British nurse, a pregnant Native woman, and the Native woman's Inuit, her nephew. And the plane crashed, and they were on their way to the Yellowknife, the capital of the Northwest Territories, from the far, far north, way up above the Arctic Circle. And the plane crashed. The two women died, and he, the pilot, the German pilot, had his legs broken, and the boy was okay, but the German pilot, after so many days, they didn't have any food, and he started dining on the British nurse. So that's where you got Kraut Eats British Nurse, which was a headline in a London tabloid.
It's a great name to a chapter. And another one, Saved by Peter, Paul, and Mary. That chapter, absolutely. It was a great chapter. And I can understand why you don't want to talk.
Chapter.
Why you don't want to talk to Paul Stuckey again.
No, it's okay. No, it was, that was a good period in my life because I sort of hit my stride as a writer. That was in Waterville, Maine. I was working for a small paper there. That was after some big-time journalism. I went back to small-time journalism, but I found good stories. And one of the things that also, I'm not sure that's in that chapter, but it's around that time. When I first wrote this book, the first draft in 2007, it was strictly work-related. And when I rewrote it now it's 2 years ago, 2017, I put a lot of personal stuff in. And so that episode in Maine also involved the death of my son at 2 days old. And I'd never written about that before. Mm-hmm. That's what we do. We write about what's happened to us. So that's in there, too.
Sure. Do you recommend that that students now, and journalistic students or creative writing students, that they get into writing as a profession? Or?
Oh, God, no. No. My journalism students, I taught post-grad journalism at a college here just outside Toronto.
Right.
And my journalism students on the first day of class, their first day of class, I'd look around the room and say, if anybody, any of you can do anything else, get the hell out of here, because you're just not going to. And it was purely financial. I'd probably say the same thing for different reasons now, but it was you're never going to make any money in this business.
Right.
Anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, sitting around with some younger people, and they ask you to give them some advice about writing, what would be the advice that you would give them?
I think it's fine to write sentences, but if you're not going to communicate with someone, with your reader, it's a waste of time. It's just for you. So you have to communicate, and the way to communicate is by telling stories, again, with a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Sure.
And, you know, it's like when you're telling stories to your kids. John Irving wrote about this in GARP. It's you're telling stories to your kids, and your kids saying, well, what happens next, Dad? And what happens next, Dad? And what happens next, Dad? And that's what you have to give them. You have to give them what happens next and have them eager to want to know what happens next.
Yeah, that's very true, actually. Well, Bobby Jean, would you like to ask the question?
I just looked at my watch to see what time we were at. Well, you know, Ken, since this is called the Writer's Block, we do love to ask our guests to talk about writer's block. Do you get it? Do you not get it? Do you believe in it, not believe in it? I know a little bit maybe of what your answer might be based on some writer's block you shared in this book, but tell us a little bit about you and writer's block.
Are you talking about literal writer's block as opposed to your show? When
yes.
You have writer's block?
Yes. Yes. You as a writer, have you experienced writer's block?
Yeah,
I did.
A lot more the older I get, I can tell you that. I think as a writing nonfiction, you always have the reporting and the research. So but when I've always written with my ear, so if I can just get my head pointed and my ear working, and one thing I learned writing for television was to read your stuff aloud, and if it sounds right, it probably is right, and if you hit a if you hit a pause or a speed bump, you'll start going blah 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 blah, and you know, so you need to smooth it out. And so, did that answer your question? I'm sorry.
Well, it's like,
I think your writing, when you were working all of the years as a journalist, I would guess, and I'm sure Bob would agree with this, that you really couldn't have writer's block. You had to get right. that story out.
Yeah,
you were
very much
doing
yeah.
what you were doing in a very, very timely basis. You talk about trying to write your first book in Thunder Bay, and you set out to, you know, get that book going, and you had some struggles. So I would imagine that as a writer, for you, there would be times that you just wouldn't have experienced it, and times that you have.
Yeah, that time in Thunder Bay was rough because I knew what I liked, and I knew what I wanted to write about, and I had an idea of how to craft a novel, but I just couldn't get it going. I just couldn't get a rhythm going. And by the time I got a rhythm going, I kind of ran out of money and had to go back to to a job. So it was that book that I started, that novel I started in Thunder Bay, I actually finished that. And I also finished the screenplay, which I was very happy with. But they're not out there yet for anybody, so we'll see.
I wanted to ask you about...
do you have anything that you're working on now, since those are completed?
What I'm working on now is trying to reach a wider audience with the book that I have out there. And it's been tough. I don't have an agent. I don't have a publisher. I did this on my own because I thought I got so many discouraging, not about my work, but discouraged. I actually had an agent who said, "You're just too old. We don't want to invest our time in you."
Oh.
I'm not literally, I'm not working on anything now. I do write. I turn out the occasional blog. I started a private blog for my grandkids, in which I write them little stories. And
well, that's cool.
That's about it right
yeah.
now.
Yeah, one thing I did want to ask you was regarding, you know, we all have a story that we covered that probably wasn't the most important story in the world, but it was a lot of fun. And what was that one story for you that sticks out?
A lot of fun.
You remember for being just
murder,
a fun
murder
story.
Suicide in Sausalito.
I mean, I covered the Zsa Zsa Gabor trial, and it was like the most fun I've ever had. But, you know, go ahead.
You covered what that was the most fun?
The Zsa Zsa Gabor trial.
Oh, okay.
She slapped the cop.
I actually had a lot of fun covering some really serious stuff. I covered a murder trial, and Effley Bailey was the defense lawyer, and the defendant was a cop who was a dirty cop in New York, and I had a ball covering that. I covered the end of Dog Day Afternoon,
right.
and that was great. I covered Olympics. I covered a lot of sports as well, and spent a year covering baseball. And it would have been a lot of fun, except for the ball players. On the field they were wonderful. Off the field they weren't that charming.
Yeah. Just read Ball 4.
Yeah, I did read Ball 4 before. Obviously, I covered the 78 season, which ended with Bucky Dent in Fenway Park, which, being a Red Sox fan, was not a great joy. And that's when I quit being a baseball writer. But, so fun. I found it all fun, actually. I enjoyed what I did. I come home or sit in the bar after work and talk with my colleagues, whether they were with the same news organization or a rival news organization. It was always fun. It was always a lot of laughs.
Well, newspaper guys are legendary in bars.
Well, yeah.
yeah, we've been there. Yeah.
Bars, alcohol, and cigarettes.
Well, I still have the cigarettes, unfortunately, but I was telling Jim the other day that I quit drinking under the strangest circumstances.
You got the flu.
And that was 4 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was about this time of year. I had some kind of flu bug, and it just knocked me on my butt for a week. Yeah. And when I came out of it, I couldn't stand the taste of alcohol, and I haven't had a drink since. So I never took the pledge. I just couldn't stand it anymore after 50-some-odd years of very, very dedicated drinking.
You didn't need to take the pledge. You got the flu.
Yeah.
We had as I was telling you the other night, we had one of our writers that were on when we asked her the writer's block question. I don't remember who it was. Maybe Bobby Jean can. When we asked her, and she goes, well, her philosophy is write drunk and edit sober.
Well, that's great advice.
Except you don't drink.
I wrote a lot. I wrote a lot with a bottle of Yellowtail Shiraz, a liter and a half bottle, a big bottle. And then by the time it was finished, I knew that was my time to quit for the night. So I wrote a lot on that.
Oh, yeah. Sounds like it. Hey, well, we're running out of time here. And golly, I really want to thank you for coming in and joining us, Ken. It's been a real hoot.
It's my pleasure.
You? And I know we kept you up late because you are, of course, in Toronto.
Yeah, I'm a night owl. It's fine.
That's where they try to make Toronto look like New York City all the time.
That's right.
It doesn't work, but hey. As soon as they show
that
tower.
You mean in all the movies.
Yeah, movies and TV. As soon as they show that tower, we know it's Toronto.
Hey, it's cheaper to film.
Yeah,
there.
That's the tip-off.
Anyway, your email address and your website are? Well, actually, your website is? Well, go ahead.
My website is kenbecker.net.
Right. And your
email? My email address is kenbecker@rogers, rogers.com.
And your blog spot is where?
My blog is the Becker Files.
Right.
I got this Files thing, maybe from Rockford. I don't know. I got stuck on Becker Files.
Love that show.
Expat Files, and I like the expat from Graham Greene or Hemingway or something. Yeah. Anyway, Files, Becker Files,
okay.
The Becker Files.
Cool.
Yes.
And thank you again for joining us. It's been just a great. It's been a hoot having you.
Yes, it has.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure talking to you folks.
The best of luck to your book. And
thank you.
Oh, sure. And let's hear from you. Don't, as soon as you get something else published, let us know.
I sure will.
Thank you so much.
Happy New Year to you all.
Happy New Year to you as well.
Thank you, and the same to you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Ken.
Cheers. Bye.
And Ken
He's
Becker.
A Canadian. He said cheers.
Kenoke. So, Bobby Jean, why are you on a train now?
We are pulling into Kansas City, I think, or that may be the next big stop as we head towards Albuquerque.
Excellent.
Getting in tomorrow at about 3:30, 26 hours of train riding.
Is it fun?
Oh, I came clear across country.
You know what? It is fun.
I had just gotten out of the hospital. I couldn't fly it. I had to take the train.
Oh.
And it was 3 days.
I love trains. I just never had a chance.
You go to sleep so easily.
Yeah.
It's the swing and the click, 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 click. Oh, man, it's so much. It just knocks you out.
Most trains I've ridden are in Italy, and there it's like every half hour they stop for a strike.
Well,
the train stops in the middle of nowhere. Everybody gets up and leans out the window, and 10 minutes later, they go again.
It's those farging Italians. Damn Italians.
But they do have good train service. So.
There you go. Well, Happy New Year, Bobby Jean.
Well, thank you so much. It's great to be able to chime in tonight. And
well, we have to call you now with this new Skype.
Thursday night and join you, and that will be from our hotel room in Denver.
Next Thursday?
Next Thursday, yes. We head for the most important Western trade show of the year in Denver, the Western English Sales Association trade show. And we'll drive to Denver during the day, and I'll call in from our hotel room.
Well, we have to call you. We have to call you now.
Yes, well, you'll have to call me, but I'll have my laptop and Skype, and I won't be moving like today.
Perfect. Okay, well, have fun. My best to Jim,
right.
And of course, Bob's best to Jim, and Bob has started his new Lancer book.
Yep. Outlined everything yesterday. I'm going to start writing on Monday.
Oh, that's exciting, Bob. And,
yeah, I'm really excited about it.
And my book, Jefferson's Chance, is done with the first writing. The first cut is done. And we're in editing now.
That's exciting. And I saw a post about how many copies of Jonah Blue you've sold.
A ton.
Yes. That is so exciting.
Over 7,000. Wow. Huh?
Jim's actually making money.
Well, still not that much.
That's very exciting. That's so exciting.
Yep. It's exciting for me, too. Okay, for Bob and Bobby Jean and myself, this is another edition of the Writer's Block, Down the Tube. And let's see, wait a minute. Before we go, let me find out here. We got, let me see. Next week's guest is, Dawn Ireland. And she has written The Prophecy of Tho and The Last Dog. So she will be with us next Thursday. And she is also a publisher on the side. So this will be an interesting conversation.
Oh,
so
very interesting.
Tune in next week, next Thursday, 7 p.m. Pacific time. And for Bobby Jean, good night, Bobby Jean. For
good night.
Bob Brill and myself, Jim Christina, we are out of here. We'll be right back.